Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first interview, folks, is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Mary Angela DeGrazia DiTucci, AGMD. So, can you tell me a little bit about AGMD?
Yes. The Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, or AGMD, is a nonprofit international organization. It was established in 1991, and we started off with a very small nucleus of medical advisors and a small nucleus of patients and family members, and it has just blossomed. So we have quite a few people and also some world-renowned, distinguished advisors, medical, nutritionists, and scientific advisors on our board. It functions as a clearinghouse for members of the medical and scientific and nutritional communities. It serves as an integral educational resource for GI motility diseases and disorders. And, of course, it provides a form of support for patients and their families suffering from gastrointestinal motility disorders.
So I'm curious. Getting surround sound there. So,
you're breaking up a little bit. I couldn't hear you.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with these conditions, can you tell me a little bit about how they might affect a person?
Yes. So, there's a wide array of motility disorders, but the word motility itself means motion. When you have a GI motility disorder, the peristalsis, or the wave-like contractions that propel food and liquid through your digestive tract, they become impaired. So, for example, if you have a lot of constipation, you may have slow motility or slow peristalsis. If you have diarrhea, it could be rapid peristalsis. You could have a combination of both, and in very severe cases, that peristalsis can be totally paralyzed. And that can affect your esophagus, your stomach, your small intestine, large intestine, and even your anus and rectum.
So, if it's completely paralyzed, I'm guessing a person can't digest at all.
In some cases, that's correct, yes. And so what happens is if your digestive tract is not functioning properly at all, then you may be a candidate for tubal feedings. And a lot of our patients are on tubal feedings, pending what it is. Now, if you have gastrointestinal reflux or gastroesophageal reflux disease affecting the esophagus, that you may still be able to get your nourishment. Heartburn, you get reflux, those may be corrected. If you have IBS, that's another one, very common among patients. And that too, there are different remedies and different treatments for that. Some, they're more successful with the treatment. Some may not. And again, that's very individual in nature. You have some of the other types of motility disorders, such as chronic idiopathic or chronic intestinal pseudoobstruction, or gastroparesis, or achalasia, diffuse esophageal spasms. And those types of motility disorders, which could affect the esophagus or the stomach or the intestines, can become impaired. And as a result of that, treatments have to be very individualized, and also treatments may be a little more limited on some of those.
So, do you know offhand about how many people are affected by these motility disorders?
Depends on which one you're talking about. So, if you're talking, for example, about pseudoobstruction, in which I have to add that I do have pseudoobstruction, gastroparesis, achalasia, reflux, and diffuse esophageal spasm. So I'm a patient affected by a lot of these. The pseudoobstruction is on the rarer side. So we belong to the National Association of Rare Disorders. I believe you have a rare disorder organization as well in Canada.
Yes.
And there's a very small population of people, and really the number is not known. It can affect children as well as adults. When you have something like IBS, that's far more common. I don't know, in the United States, maybe like 35 million or more. I don't know what the current statistic is on that. But certainly with reflux and IBS, those are the more common ones. And so, of course, more of the population is going to be affected by that. And it's not only relegated to the U.S., but Canada and the European countries, as well as Asia, Africa, other continents.
So, in your time with the organization, is there any success moment that stands out for you, where you've been able to provide support?
Yes. So, in 1991, as they said, we were established. And then, in 1996, we were one of the first organizations to do a symposium on digestive motility disorders. And that really focused a lot on pseudoobstruction at the time. We were the first organization to have a three-day symposium incorporating some of the world-renowned experts in that area of GI motility. And along with that, we had patients, as well as family members, physicians, nutritionists, pharmaceutical, and scientists, all in the same venue. And it was a forum of support, so not only did patients learn from that, and doctors, but they were able to share their knowledge, and the patients were able to share their perspectives, as well as their family members. And I recall one doctor who was on our board, he was one of the gurus of motility disorders, and at the time, he said, "I really didn't think that this would work out, having patients in the same area as doctors, nurses, the medical community, and having them all just be very respectful and learn from each other and share information." And it was such a nurturing and successful environment, and that doctor was very pleased. And since then, we've duplicated that, and other organizations have replicated that type of a forum, which is so beneficial to everybody. It was thought of in years and years ago that the patients were incapable of understanding a lot of what the doctors were saying in the technical field. But because the patients flipped it, they were surprised at how much the patients could really grasp and understand what the doctors were saying. And the same goes true for the medical community, sitting there and being able to listen to patients tell their story and see the impact of treatment and the availability of the medical for them, that impact that it had on everybody's life.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up, so it's a little hard to hear you.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Of course. This next segment of our show, we'll hear from Leah Noble from the Horizon Achievement Center. So, can you tell me a little bit about Horizon?
Yes, absolutely. So, first of all, my name is Leah Noble. I work at the Horizon Achievement Center, so that's what we're here to talk about today. The Horizon Achievement Center, we're on Cape Breton Island. We are in Sydney, which is the largest town on Cape Breton. We are a vocational training and employment service center for adults with intellectual disabilities, and that is taken straight from our website. So that's the, you know, the official title. So vocational training, we have a bakery, we have a catering kitchen, we have a print shop. So in all of these different areas, this is where we deliver the vocational training. And we have employment services as well. So myself, I'm an employment counselor. I work with the clients, the participants who come to Horizon to up their skills in terms of doing interviews, job searching, trying to get out into the community and find employment out in the community. So we've been in operation since 1984. That's as old as I am. And we also operate social enterprises. So we have a coffee shop. And I should say those sections I mentioned, like the bakery and the catering kitchen, those are all considered social enterprises as well, because of the fact that it's a hybrid. I'm sure you've heard the term social enterprise before, yes. But it's a hybrid of business, but also something that does something for the greater social good. So we sell baked goods to the community. We sell our food. You know, the print shop has customers in the community as well. So it's a real blending of business and community, and you know, having chances for folks with disabilities to learn new skills and have some work. And then for me myself personally, I'm, like I said, an employment counselor. I also do graphic design and some marketing. So that's where I do some stuff within Horizon.
So in terms of the social enterprises, how does the community respond to having people with disabilities actually being a part of the workforce and being included in something that would benefit society?
Right. How does the community respond? That's your question.
Yes.
I would say overall pretty well, you know, especially when they are being served by people with disabilities. There's a lot of acceptance. I would say the struggle is also to move beyond stereotypes or assumptions that people might have about people with disabilities. You know, they might see them as cute, you know, or childlike. And so to come across and help them see that these are people, these are adults, you know, and that this is an opportunity with dignity and not just like, aw, do you know what I mean? So that, like, I would say that having folks out in the community is great, but that's, and the community responds with support, but also sometimes there's that they just don't fully understand, or they haven't really had the chance yet to understand. I mean, I'm talking about the community when I say they, that there's more complexity to folks with intellectual disability.
So, do you work in partnership with others in the business community?
We do. Yeah, absolutely we do. Yeah, in a whole variety of ways. So, for example, we would have, like, I'm thinking immediately of the other businesses who come to us to get work done. So, for example, we cater to different, for different events, for meetings, that kind of thing. I mean, not so much since COVID, of course, but prior to that. Also, there are businesses who bring work to our print shop, bring work to be folded and mailed out. We're also like a Canada Post mailing center. But we also have partnerships, and this is important to my work, because we have work placements, work experience with other businesses. So we would liaise, we would facilitate folks with disabilities having job placements at other businesses. So there was a florist that I worked with to give a 6-week work opportunity to somebody who wanted some experience with working in that industry. We job coach, so we go with the person to help them get comfortable and maybe learn the new skills, that kind of thing. So we do very much work with other businesses in the community.
So do you find there's a long-term potential in getting these employees job placements? Is there the possibility that if they do work above and beyond, they might have a longer-term situation?
Yeah, absolutely. It happens. Not to the percentage that I would like. You know, I would prefer 100% people who do work placements get jobs long-term, but it does happen. I mean, really, and the economy here isn't super great anyway, so that it's hard for even able-bodied people, people without disability, to find work. But we do our best and they do their best. And it has definitely happened where someone has done a work placement somewhere and then has gone on to be hired full-time or part-time, depending on what their own needs are and the company's needs are. So yeah, definitely.
So in your time with Horizon, is there any individual success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many. And that was, you know, you had asked in advance of this, what's the greatest success for Horizon? And when I was preparing for this, I was thinking about how, you know, one of the things that's so successful for us is inclusion. And, you know, we can say sort of these buzzwords. But personally, I feel that every single person who comes to Horizon, whether they have what might seem to be a small achievement or what is a larger, you know, a whole variety of them, those are all our successes, you know, or I mean, they're not ours, but you know what I mean. So an individual person, which was your question, an individual person, I'm thinking specifically of a gal I know named Margaret, who works for a recycling depot, and she goes and she cleans there 3 days a week, and she's been there now, I believe, 15 years. So that was actually before my time, but I got to know Margaret as a result of working at Horizon. And she comes to Horizon a couple of days a week, and then she also goes to this recycling facility as well, and takes the bus there and goes in, and she has her own relationship with all the staff that are there. She is super proud of that job. She loves it, and it means a lot to her. So that's definitely one person. Another person is a gal named Caitlin. Shout out to Caitlin if you're listening to this. She came to Horizon. She was very shy and anxious, had a lot of anxiety. And I ended up teaching her how to use a DSLR camera because that was, like I said, my training is in graphic design and the arts. And she has gone on to take lots of great photos. She took the photos for our annual meeting for several years in a row, and got fee for service, has also just kind of been able to work with her anxiety and feel more confident and more, what's the word? Just, yeah, more confident in what she's doing. So, but I mean, like I said, almost every single person who I work with or who comes to Horizon has had some achievements, whether they are small seeming or large seeming. It's all, it seems to be all fairly positive.
Right, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, absolutely.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities to individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about AGMD from Mary Angela Grazia de Tucci, and a little bit about the Horizon Achievement Center from Leah Noble. In this segment of our show, Darlene Williamson will be telling us a little bit about her aphasia work. So, can you tell me a bit about your aphasia work?
Well, I personally am a speech-language pathologist, and I spent all my career working with people with aphasia. So I have a passion for it, and a piece of that work is getting involved with the National Aphasia Association, and I've been president for, I think, 6 years. So we have a very active and engaged board, and it's really a labor of love for me.
So, for those who might not be as familiar, how does aphasia typically affect a person?
Aphasia is a disorder of language. And if you think of language, like perhaps in the terms of a foreign language, when you're learning a language that isn't your native language, you need to be able to understand it, read it, write it, and speak it. And in the case of aphasia, those four components are involved. So when someone has damage to the area of their brain that controls their language, which is a little different from speech, it's really the manipulation of words and language in your brain. Any of those four aspects can be involved: reading, writing, listening, and speaking. But it is not a disorder of intelligence. So that is one of the most common misconceptions, that people hear somebody struggling with language and feel like they might be cognitively impaired, when in fact they are just trying to manipulate the language in their brain.
So, do you know offhand about how many people are affected?
In the United States, there are somewhere between 2 and 3 million. About 40% of people who have a stroke have some degree of aphasia, but aphasia can also be secondary to a traumatic brain injury. There are combat wounded veterans who have aphasia. It can be due to tumor removal, and there is a specific kind of aphasia that is a progressive aphasia that occurs in a specific kind of dementia. Even children can have aphasia. So it's very tricky business to get our arms around all of the exact numbers, but somewhere between 2 and 3 million people in the United States.
So how do you go about helping those affected to master language and to be able to deal with their condition?
Well, thank you for that twofold question, because it's the whole aspect of working to restore language. Typically done under a speech-language pathologist who has tools at their fingertips to work through some of the language issues. Again, if you think of it in terms of learning a foreign language, some of those same kinds of things would apply. Working with vocabulary, working with reading and writing exercises, listening exercises. But the bigger issue, and the reason that the National Aphasia Association exists, is aphasia is going to be a lifelong condition. So how do people deal with it over the long haul? How do they live successfully with aphasia? How do they navigate their community, their friends, and even how do they restore their role within their family when their ability to communicate is impaired.
So, in your time with the organization, has there been any success that stands out for you?
It's hard to point to just one. We have done a survey in the public that people know and understand about aphasia, and only 7% of the respondents in our survey actually knew what aphasia was. People have heard of it, but they really don't understand it and don't get that it's a language disorder and not a cognitive disorder. So that is the survey was revealing and a nice project. What it points out to us is how important the National Aphasia Association is in educating and advocating for people with aphasia, and that we have a lot of work ahead of us to do this education and advocacy. In some interesting way, COVID has forced our community to use Zoom to get together and interact with each other. I think it's indeed forced everyone to learn how to interact virtually. And so we have greatly expanded our programs for both people living with aphasia and their loved ones to connect virtually, share their challenges, share their successes, laugh and have fun together, and really unite as a community. So over the past year and a half, that's been what I would consider a major success for us.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for understanding and ongoing acknowledgement of aphasia, what would you say?
Very straightforwardly, know what aphasia is. Know that the person with aphasia is the same person that they were prior to acquiring this language disorder. And know that it only affects the manipulation of language. It in no way affects the intelligence. And that is the single biggest message that people with aphasia want the public to know.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, when it comes to conditions like aphasia, some people might tend to discard it or overlook the fact of its reality simply because they wouldn't have a frame of reference. It's not one of your household names, by and large. Fact is, we tend to hear of some conditions more than others. Doesn't mean the less known ones are any less valid or any less impactful. The key to any interaction is always keeping an open mind, accepting the possibility someone might learn a little differently or process things a little differently, to be there to support them either way. The fact is, we never know, and we're going to need some support ourselves. But there's no way we can know what we don't know. There's so many conditions out there. Keeping an open mind helps us keep an open heart, and that allows us to build a base of community, which is something we all not only long for, but need in our lives. Truth is, we're all one when it comes to humanity. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.